I'm Marie Bernard, host of Synchronicity, Friday mornings at 9. Join me as we explore topics like health and wellness, prosperity, inner peace, the law of attraction, and more. Tap into good vibrations to start your weekend feeling uplifted and optimistic. Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. Fridays from 9 to 10 a.m. on CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver. Good morning. Welcome to Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul here on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. Or you might also be listening online at CITR.ca, CosmicDimensions.com, EmpowerRadio.com, or on the Co-Creator Network. And I am your host, Marie Bernard. Thank you so much for joining us today. Today's guest is Dr. Dave Grayson Dickey. He is the author of Filamentology. And what is filamentology? Well, we're going to talk to Dr. Dave about that today. Hi.
Hello, Marie.
How you doing?
I'm doing fine. How about yourself?
Good. Can I call you Dr. Dave?
Dave works just fine.
Okay. So you are a medical doctor. Are you still practicing?
Actually, I am a dentist.
Oh, okay.
And I am still practicing, yes.
Wonderful. Okay. So what exactly, I've read your book, and you talk about filamentology, is it like the energy matrix? How do you describe it?
Yes, that would be a good way of describing it. If a shaman or a seer perceives the universe at large, it appears as if there are a number of filaments or energy fibers that extend in both directions into infinity that are completely overlapping, and these filaments appear to have like a luminescence to them, and that these filaments also are aware. So this is the general universal energy field of awareness. It's been called many things throughout history, Yahweh, Brahman, God, Allah. But basically, filamentology means the study of the filaments.
Okay, and so these filaments that you describe, they're like lines of energy that go on into infinity?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, wonderful. And so are you, I'm curious because in the book, when you're writing about your theories and how you view the world and how things should be done, you write them almost as if they're fact. And I'm wondering where you came into this information. How did you come into this knowledge?
Well, that's a very good question. That was one of the things that I really struggled with initially was, what tone should I take when I'm writing filamentology? Well, first off, it conflicts with several major points of science as we understand it today. For instance, it conflicts with the theory of the Big Bang theory, for instance, and it conflicts a bit with modern medical science. So it would be very difficult to actually footnote a book like Filamentology. I guess I could have presented it as more of a theory. But I asked a number of people, and they said, well, Dave, if this is what you believe, go ahead and present it as such. So that was the way I came about it. And filamentology is a synthesis and reorganization of the great observations of humanity, not just my observations, but scientific observations, shamanic observations, historical observations, and a few personal observations.
And so there are 48 vibrational groups of filaments?
Yes. That's a shamanic or an observation by seers in terms of how they attempt to organize the vibratory nature of this filamentous energy fiber field. Now, 40, this is according to shamans. I have never personally actually perceived or counted these particular groupings, but 40 of these groups of vibrations are for our physical universe. In other words, the rocks and the planets and the stars. And then 8 of them are for awareness. And one of these bands of awareness is for all of the entities that we're aware of on this world, such as humans, cats, dogs, bears, trees, insects. And then seven of these groups are for things that have typically been called angels or spirits. In philomatology, I refer to them as non-physical body beings.
And you also discuss throughout philomatology that people shouldn't necessarily try to make friends with these non-physical beings.
You know, I think that that is a statement that I would make for most contemporary humans. The reason I would say that is I think a good analogy is the ocean. The ocean is a magnificent and beautiful place, and it's a great place to travel or to recreate or to do a number of things like that. And living in the ocean, there's some creatures like dolphins, and dolphins are very friendly, and they seem to play with boats as boats are sailing. And there's even apocryphal stories of dolphins helping shipwrecked sailors to shore. But as we also know, there's some very dangerous entities that exist out in the ocean, such as sharks. And then there's some other entities that are so far removed from humanity as to be almost, the only thing that we can really do is be in awe of the beauty and diversity of these creatures. And I'm thinking specifically of like the abyssal jellyfish, some of these luminous jellyfish that we see. And the filamentous energy fibers and the denizens or these spirits that live out there are similar. Some of them seem to be quite sympathetic and friendly to humanity. Some of them, unfortunately, are quite antithetical to humanity, and they actually prey on humans. Probably most of them are so far removed from humanity that we can have virtually no interface with them at all. So I think that it would be inadvisable for an average person who has very little knowledge of dealing in the realm of the filamentous energy fibers to try to interface with these creatures, these entities, because, you know, just like in the ocean, you might run across a shark. You might run across something that is dangerous to deal with. So some of these entities are good. Some of them are dangerous. And I don't believe that the average contemporary human can really tell the difference. Maybe in the future, we will reestablish our connection with these amazing entities. But I think for right now, we should probably leave them alone.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Oh, it's interesting that people have such different views, because just last week I had two women on who wrote a book. They're writing a second book now using the Ouija board, and we had this discussion about like scary entities, and their response to that was kind of like, well, just your intention of meeting positive energies and, you know, protect yourself with white light and things like that is going to protect you. And it sounds like what you're saying is that that's probably not enough unless you really know what you're doing.
I think the key there is to really know what you're doing. I think I didn't actually hear that interview that you were talking about, but there are a lot of people that use spirit guides, for instance. That's part of their technique, their healing technique, or how they help people. Now, if they are very good at isolating and finding these positive and helpful spirits, well, that's great. I think that's absolutely great. But I think the key is knowing the difference. So, I just don't believe that the average contemporary person knows that. Now, perhaps if you get someone that can guide you through it, well, that's a different story.
Okay, but then you don't necessarily, I mean, you would still have to go on your trust and intuition, whether you are confident enough in that person to guide you as well.
That's true. So once again, coming back to my original statement, I think it's something that for contemporary humans, we would probably just, for the average person, be just as well to leave these alone for a time. I believe that ancient man interfaced with these entities all of the time. I think that that was just part of their existence. And I think we've become disconnected from them for the most part. But I believe perhaps in the future, future humans will be able to reestablish their connection and communication with these just magnificent and awe-inspiring entities.
Well, jumping way far ahead into the book, because we're talking about ancient man now, you actually talk about the Mayan civilization, and there's a section where you talk about drug use and psychotropic type drugs, and how you believe your theory is that the Mayan civilization was using these types of drugs, I don't know, marijuana or peyote or something like that, to get in touch with the filamentology, the filamentous fibers, and that's where they were deriving their mathematics, their knowledge of building the pyramids and all of that. Can you tell us more about that theory?
Yes. Down in the rainforest of the Yucatan Peninsula and in northern Central America, there are some really amazing natural plant derivatives. Now, you mentioned marijuana and peyote. I think they were probably more of the psilocybin mushrooms that the Mayans were using, although we really don't know. We really don't know exactly what it was, but the Mayans came onto the historical picture, say, around 2,000 years ago, and they went out around 700 to, 1,200 years ago. I believe that modern archaeology has this wrong. They constantly keep wondering about how the Mayans fell. I think the real question to ask is, how did they arrive? Where did they get their information? How did they keep their society together? What techniques of societal cohesion did they use? And I think it's plausible to say that much of what they did was just non-drug related shamanic interface with this filamentous energy fiber realm. But I've got from some other sources that say that much of what happened in Mexico, now probably not necessarily like in Egypt or other places that have shamanic or seer traditions, but much of what happened in Mexico, not just the Maya, but in many parts of Mexico, was sparked or instigated by the psychotropic plants that grow there. So, and I think that the Mayans are a fascinating example. It's kind of a warning to modern humans, and it kind of ties in with why I think that the non-physical body beings are a little dangerous to work with, because most of these societies ancient societies that had these amazing abilities, like the pyramids of Egypt or the Mayans or the Aztecs or any number of different ancient societies, you know, where did they get this information? And the filamentology concept is that, yes, in fact, it came from the realm of the filamentous energy fibers and from specifically the non-physical body beings that exist there.
Thank you so much for explaining that to us. And I want to talk more about filamentology in just a moment. It's time for a break. We are speaking today with Dr. Dave Grayson Dickey. He is the author of Filamentology, The Principles and Purposes of Life. And we'll speak with him more about what filamentology is and how it can affect your life. We'll be back with more Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul in a moment.
Strength. Dignity. Respect, beauty, self-worth, safety, confidence, choice, hope. The Beauty Night Society is a registered charity dedicated to helping marginalized women introduce trust, hope, and self-esteem into their lives. Through its popular makeover program, the Beauty Night Society has touched the lives of thousands and reintroduced a healthy touch to the lives of vulnerable women throughout British Columbia, creating real life makeovers. Please visit www.beautynight.org for information on programs and on how to help. Beauty Night, because dignity is beautiful.
I think I was blind before I met you. Welcome back to Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and that's really interesting, that Beauty Night commercial. I've heard it before, but last night I had had dreams all over the place, but I do remember as I was listening to that ad that I was talking to someone about how they might want to volunteer for the Look Good, Feel Better program, where you give makeovers to women who are battling cancer, and it helps them to feel better. And it sounds like Beauty Night is kind of similar. So I want to welcome Dr. Dave Grayson Dickey back to the show and jump into the topic of dreams, because that kind of felt like a weird synchronicity there. And
that's a very good segue.
Yeah. So, because in your book, you have a whole section on dreams, and there's also, there's not just dreams, there are edifices. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
That's correct.
The edifice. Yeah. And then there's the gesture, and we'll talk more about that. But when you have dreams that kind of have correlation to your waking life, what do you make of that?
Well, there are four primary principles and purposes of life, and then there are four primary techniques. And I'll jump into the techniques here. The first technique is the dream and interacting with the dream. Actually, that's the first two. There are many, many ways to interact with dreams. And it's interesting to hear you say that you actually had a lot of dreams last night. Do you have one that you could share with us real quick? Just a quick little sound bite from a dream?
I don't know. My dreams are all so all over the place. Like, I kind of, sometimes I have, it feels like I have dreams that kind of go on almost all night, and they're sort of like little tidbits. I remember I was in this weird building, and at one point there were like these people who were kind of living, they were hiding from the world because they weren't doing what society thought they should. Like, they were kind of living, I don't know if they were living polygamist or they were living like those people who don't have any electricity. I forget the name of those people.
The Amish,
yeah. It was sort of some kind of group like that, that they were detached from society. And then at some other point, I was in this building and locked in this room. I don't know. It was just really weird. And then at another point, I was talking to some woman about volunteering. And I guess she was like a beautician or something. I don't know. For some reason, I was like, oh, maybe you would want to volunteer with the Look Good, Feel Better program. And then I heard the Beauty Night Society ad, and it just brought it back to my mind, because obviously I wasn't thinking about that on my way here this morning. So my dreams are kind of all over the place and random.
That's fabulous. And I would say that they're not either. I think that they sound like they are resplendent and laden with meaning and symbology. Let me give you a little 2-minute way to interpret dreams. We could actually go in and try to interpret that dream a little bit, but now I go into detail in filamentology, so this is just the real short version. For instance, if a person sees a dog in a dream, and this dog is perhaps outside of their house and barking, let's just say that's the dream, that a person in the dream, they have a dog outside of their house and barking. The first thing that you have to do is to analyze the place, the setting, the characters, the motivation, and then how you feel. Those are those four or five components of the dream. But here's the key to it. To some people, a dog is a very protective and nurturing animal. But to other people, a dog is a very hostile and aggressive animal and potentially dangerous. So what you would need to do, or what a person would need to do when analyzing their dreams, is to, for instance, I would ask you, what do the Amish mean to you? That would be my question to you, Marie.
I don't know. I don't really think about the Amish that often, to be honest. I don't know. I guess I have multiple opinions. I mean, I think that there is a lot of, I've seen documentaries about young people who've left the Amish community, and it sounds like there was a lot of brainwashing and forceful, like, you have to live this way, and guilt tripping. If you leave us, you can never come back. But then their simple way of life, I can see a lot of benefit to that as well. So I think I have mixed opinions.
There you are. So it's and that statement right there probably sums it up. In other words, I am ambivalent on this group of people. Now, you probably know that working in your field, there are probably a lot of people that would disagree with what you have to say, you know. And you know,
no way.
I was just throwing that out there. You know, maybe there's a few people that would disagree with what you have to say.
Okay.
And you are probably, I would guess that you are ambivalent about that. The shows that I've listened to for you, you're very honest and sincere. And you have a great sense of humor, by the way, Marie.
Oh, thank you.
How do you handle that, and how do you feel about that? Well, I would guess that you're probably ambivalent. And you have a great platform from which to try to reach a number of people. And I don't really know you very well, other than what I've listened to you on your show, but it just sounds like your dream was just laying it out there for you. I think that's it was a great dream, and just continue analyzing it and continue working with it. It's dreams, I would say, have layer upon layer upon layer of symbology. And once again, that was the quick 2-minute description of the dream interpretation technique. It's more involved, actually, in the book of Philomatology. So
definitely. And while we're talking specifically about Philomatology, where can people get your book?
Oh, it's on Amazon, Barnes & Noble. It's on quite a number of online bookstores.
Okay, and it's philomatology.com. I will also put a link.
It's actually philomatology.org.
.org. Philomatology.org. And just sound it out if you need to know how to spell it. And I will also put a link up to that on my website, spiritualshow.com. So the website is philomatology.org. And now, speaking of dreams, you had some experiences with rainbows, and
Oh, yeah.
I can't remember. Did that start out with a dream?
Yes, it did.
Okay.
Yes, it did. When I was up until my mid-30s, I'm 53 now, but up until my mid-30s, I would have considered myself to have been an atheist, I think is the easiest description. I was completely disconnected. I took the Western rational scientific line that the universe was created randomly, that dreams are the disconnected ramblings of an unconscious mind, and that all of the events that we see in this modern world are either random or man-made. So that's where I started in my mid-30s. And then I went through a difficult time in my life. I was having professional difficulties, financial. I was having personal problems. And as this difficult time sort of resolved, I was left with the conclusion that my dreams had been pointing to a number of issues. Specifically, my girlfriend and I were breaking up, and she was seeing somebody else, but she wasn't telling me. But my dreams seemed to be pointing right at this. So I, at the end of this episode, I said, well, far from being the disconnected ramblings of an unconscious mind, it seems as if dreams have, you know, very much information that they are giving to us. So I started a number of years of doing dream research, reading everything that I possibly could, and using myself and a couple of friends as a sort of a small laboratory. Now, fast forwarding a number of years, I came to the conclusion that not only are dreams interpretable and that they actually have psychic properties, but that the world that we live in, this real world, the events that occur in this real world can be interpreted in the same fashion as our dreams. And that is called an edifice. Now, this was a huge stretch for me at this point, to go from a person who was a disconnected atheist to a person who was studying dreams to now open to the possibility that real-world events actually have meaning. This was stretching me a long way. So, anyway, I've always been an avid traveler, and I've traveled around the world. at this point in my life, I thought this would be a good time to take a journey to a place that had some spiritual energy. So I picked out Egypt, and this is a side idea. I said, well, let's go to Jerusalem and Israel and the environs. But that was a side trip. So when we're leaving to go to Jerusalem, we have I see out of my front window in my house a rainbow. And I said, oh, that's kind of nice. So I take a couple of pictures. The cab comes and gets us and carries us off to the airport, and we fly halfway around the world. Then we find ourselves in the ancient city of Jerusalem, the old city. And Jerusalem is an amazing place. It's history layered upon history, upon spiritual energy. And by seeming coincidence, we came out to the Western Wall. And the Western Wall is also called the Wailing Wall. And it's the last part of the Solomon's Temple. And there, soaring high above this holy site of Judaism, is a rainbow. And by the way, if you anyone that's listening to this, if you go to the website, philomentology.org, and you scroll down just a little bit, you'll see a picture of this rainbow.
And I can imagine Jerusalem, I mean, it's kind of a desert, right? They probably don't have many rainbows.
Well, I have talked to any number of people that have been to the Wailing Wall before, and none of them have seen a rainbow there. Now, I've got some pictures on the website of Jerusalem the day that I saw this rainbow, and there was not a cloud in the sky. It never rained. Even just a few minutes before when we saw this rainbow, there was just a few thin cumulus clouds. So it seems quite peculiar. And on top of which, when I came out onto the plaza of the Western Wall, I had had a few spectacular dreams earlier in the year that were so stunning that the deja vu just stopped me in my tracks. So anyway, that was rainbow number two. When we're leaving Israel, we're at the Tel Aviv airport, and we look off in the direction of Jerusalem, and lo and behold, another rainbow. And even I'm thinking, this is a little bit coincidental. So we finish our trip through Egypt and get back to California. And the next day, my girlfriend has gone off to get some food and some celebratory champagne, and I'm by myself, and I notice the sky getting orange. And the sky, and then I hear this clicking on my roof. And I'm thinking, this is a little strange. So I go out and look out my front window, and it's a hailstorm. And it's a vigorous little hailstorm, which is fairly unusual in the Bay Area, specifically down at sea level. And then we get a little bit, about a half an inch of accumulation. And then I notice this most beautiful double rainbow that I've ever seen. So now, to recapitulate the story, I started off as an atheist, disconnected. I started studying my dreams, and dreams led me into the notion of the edifice, or that real-world events are interpretable. I make a trip to Jerusalem, and I see four beautiful rainbows in very quick succession, the central one being around probably the most holy site in all of Judaism. And I had to know, I felt like I had to know what had happened. So I did the research, I was writing, and Philomentology is basically a result of that experience of mine.
Awesome. Well, it's perfect time to take a break. We will be back with more Synchronicity in just a moment. We're speaking with Dr. Dave Grayson Dickey. He is the author of Philomentology, The Principles and Purposes of Life. And there's a rainbow right on the front of the book. You can find him at philomentology.org. Back with more Synchronicity in about 30 seconds.
Scenic Drive, every Friday morning, 10 a.m. till noon, CITR.
CITR 101.9 FM here in Vancouver. You might also be listening online at citr.ca, and Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul also airs on CosmicDimensions.com, the Co-Creator Network, and on Empower Radio. Today we are speaking with Dr. Dave Grayson Dickey. He is the author of Filamentology. Welcome back to the show, Dave.
Thank you.
Hello. So I want to talk about the tuning sphere, because that seems like a pretty big, important aspect of filamentology. So can you tell us what the tuning sphere is?
Sure. Let me give you a little bit of background here first. The human being has two major components. The first is the physical body that we're all familiar with, the bones, the muscles, the blood. But the other component is an energy body. And this energy body is, you can think of it, it's not an electrical charge, but you can think of it as sort of an energetic charge that surrounds the physical body. And in most people, this energy body is a little bit bigger than the physical body. And it's basically round-shaped. And this energy body has been known by many names throughout history, such as the soul or the spirit. But the energy body has its own set of perceptions. It has its own ability to memorize or to remember things. It has its own emotions. And it also has organs. Now, when I say an organ, I would mean, you know, something like a heart or a lung. Now, if I were to describe the heart to you as an organ about the size of a fist that pumps blood that's in the center of your chest, that's a pretty brief overview of the heart. And there are obviously textbooks written on the heart and cardiology. So I'm going to give you a description of the tuning sphere, which is about that much of an oversimplification. But the tuning sphere is an energetic sphere about the size of a fist, which is about a foot and a half behind the back, and it resides within this energy body. Now, this tuning sphere, for people that are into it, is typically called the assemblage point in other systems, but this tuning sphere is what causes us to perceive the world as we do. As you and I are talking, and anyone that's listening to this show, if you're perceiving the world in a normal fashion, that is because your tuning sphere is in that general location that I described. If you move that tuning sphere, you can tune into different worlds. It's just like tuning a radio. You can, as you move the dial on a radio, you'll pick up one radio station. Then you keep moving the dial, then you have another radio station and another radio station. So the tuning sphere is an energetic organelle within the energy body that causes us to perceive not only this world, but it could allow us to perceive many, many other universes. One quick other thing about it is when we sleep, this tuning sphere naturally and gently moves away from that home position. And as it comes across different frequencies, perceptions occur, and these perceptions are what are called dreams. That's what we perceive of as our nighttime dreams.
And so, and when we were talking earlier about the psychotropic drugs, that's the purpose that we take them for, is to move that tuning sphere, correct?
Yes. I think that one of the major problems of humanity right now is we all crave that ability to move that tuning sphere. And our inability to do so drives us to psychotropic drugs. Now, all drugs are psychotropic to a greater or lesser degree. Alcohol is a very low-level psychotropic, but things like peyote, psilocybin, Jimson weed, and those types of things are fairly powerful and potent psychotropics. They do have the effect of moving the tuning sphere. So I guess to answer your question, yes, I think that's probably why people take these drugs, is because we crave, whether we know it or not, the moving of the tuning sphere.
And to jump ahead, because we're starting to run out of time here and I've got pages and pages of questions for you,
sure.
The tuning sphere is is an important part of the book. And if you want to learn more about that, then you can just get the book, Filamentology. But one thing, it was interesting, your theory, and I don't know if this is your theory or if you've developed this from reading other people's theories, but that the Big Bang Theory, we talked about at the very beginning of the show,
right.
And the Big Bang Theory is that, you know, there was like a bunch of gases and boom, everything came into creation like that. But your theory seems to be that the planets, like planet Earth, is not a young heap of rock. It's actually used to be a star.
Yes, that's correct.
Can you tell us more about that theory and how did you decide that that was your theory?
Cosmology, obviously you can get PhDs in cosmology, so I'm just going to really briefly go over this, but when you look at our sun, or when you look out at the night sky, we have now determined that these big fiery balls of gas are fusing to release energy. They fuse hydrogen atoms to release a little bit of energy, and then two hydrogen atoms, or a helium atom, two heliums, I think, is a beryllium, but they keep fusing. And this fusion process continues until you reach iron. At the point of iron, fusing anything onto an iron atom requires energy as opposed to releasing energy. So if you let the process of a star run for several billion years, you will end up with they call them brown dwarfs, actually, in modern cosmology. But an example of what a brown dwarf would look like is exactly our little home planet. In other words, it's a primarily iron-centered sphere. This theory actually existed probably, a few decades back, but because of the Big Bang Theory and accretion disk theory has become more accepted, this particular theory has sort of fallen by the wayside. But once again, the cosmology, we could spend several hours talking about that, but we actually, it's fairly well understood that a star can do a couple of three things. It can go through its lifespan. And either explode, which a few of them do, but most of them just cool down. And we have some interesting examples of that in our solar system, such as Earth, such as Jupiter and Saturn. Now, I know that people that are listening to this, the hardcore Big Bangers, are going to call me a Big Bang basher. And we can debate this at ad nauseum, but the filamentology description of cosmology does not adhere to Big Bang cosmology.
Very interesting. And also, speaking of things that are way different than what is accepted scientific fact, animal instincts, it sounds like you believe that animal instincts come from the filamentous energy fibers, not from our DNA?
To a great extent. Now, I think I give in the book, I give the example of ants building an ant mound, okay? And then the next example would be a flock of birds migrating, and then a cat bathing itself. Now, the ant, we really have no proof that demonstrates that their ability to build an ant mound and the incredibly complex social structures that they have, they don't have anywhere near enough of a brain in each individual little ant to do this. They have to be getting this information from somewhere else. And the filamentology answer is that, yes, the filamentous energy fibers are giving them their information directly. Now, a cat, which is a high and sophisticated animal, like Buster, your little cat that you had, I believe.
You've been watching my YouTube videos.
I have been. What a cute cat. What a cute cat. The cat gets most of its information through its dreams. Now, A flock of birds is intermediate. The bird does not have as sophisticated and developed as a brain or a central nervous system. So it's getting a lot of information from the filamentous energy fibers, and it's also getting a lot of, but it has some sort of innate ability. But yes, the theory is that much of the world, many of the animals of the world are directly connected and directly driven by the filamentous energy fibers and not by their primitive nervous systems. And we also might extend this just a little bit and go, well, how much of human behavior is directed by these filamentous energy fibers? And my answer would be not enough.
Okay, so it sounds like the filamentous energy fibers are what some people might call source, correct?
Oh, I'm sorry, say again?
The filamentous energy fibers are derived of what some people might call source or God.
Source, God, yes.
Yeah.
Well, it's probably, there have been many terms for this energy field throughout history. God, Yahweh, the source, Allah, Brahman. I'm just calling it the filamentous energy fibers.
So how, in your opinion, and from a filamentology standpoint, you talk about some techniques. Can we talk about how people can get more in touch with the filamentous energy or source or God?
Sure. I think there are as I believe that there are as many ways to connect to this filamentous energy fiber realm as there are people. And I think that shows such as yourself, when you have guests on that talk about, say, flowers, or you have people that talk about sound, or you have people that talk about electroencephalographs, or you have people that talk about music, all of these things can be used to connect to the filamentous energy, or as a spiritual exercise, let's say, to open up that connection between the physical body and the energy body. Now, filamentology, there's three primary techniques, and that's quite a discussion in its own right, but slips, nips, and lucid dreaming. Slips is sleep induction problem solving, which is basically when you're getting ready to go to sleep at night, if you pre-plan your next day, and you're thinking about your tasks in the next, that you're going to be accomplishing the next day, hold that, keep that going until you fall asleep. The tuning sphere starts to move, and that image that you're conveying from your physical body volition into your energy body can now be communicated in a more direct fashion. So there's one easy technique. It's much more described in filamentology. MIPS is meditative induction problem solving, which is you use the techniques of meditation to move the tuning sphere. And there's, like I said, there's a much more involved description of MIPS. But then if you have lucid dreaming, lucid dreaming is the ability to recognize that you are dreaming when you're dreaming. In other words, you wake up in your dream and you go, hey, I'm dreaming. And personally, for me, the thing I like best in this existence is lucid dream flying.
I think that's why would you want to do anything else when you realize you can dream? It's like, I'm going to fly around.
It's fabulous. It's absolutely fabulous. And sometimes when I'm lucid dreaming, I will stop and have conversations with some of the people that are there. Oh, yes, lucid dreaming is really fabulous. If you're not really enjoying your dreams, you're missing the greatest show on earth. If nothing else, they're fun.
Totally, totally. I want to lucid dream more. I've experienced it a few times, but not often enough. So maybe I'll take some of the pointers that you give in your book to induce lucid dreams.
Well, I really only briefly touch lucid dreaming and filamentology, just enough to mention it as a technique. But you can find a tremendous amount of information on the internet about lucid dreaming and how to induce lucid dreaming. I would recommend everyone back to filamentology, however, to really get an understanding of what's happening. Now, there's some of the books, as a matter of fact, I would say most of the books that describe lucid dreaming kind of hold with the idea that it's all occurring within your brain. But obviously the filamentology concept is that your brain, rather than just being a sort of desktop calculator, is really more of a computer that's connected to an internet.
So when we're dreaming and your tuning sphere moves, so are we actually tuning in like a radio? Are we tuning into a different reality, in your opinion?
Yes. 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 Now, all of these realities sort of exist on top of each other, just like a number of different radio stations can exist within the same space. But it's just a matter of at what frequency they are vibrating. Now, the realm that we live in, well, we actually live in a number of them, but the one that you and I are perceiving and communicating with, if you forget about these radio waves, is the most energetic. It's the highest energy level realm of any in this universe. But there are other realms within this filamentous energy fibers that they are loaded with all types of situations and entities. And there's a number of them.
Wonderful. Well, it's time for another break. I almost forgot. So we'll be back with more synchronicity in just a moment. And coming up in about 12 minutes is Scotty's Scenic Drive. So definitely stick around for that on CITR 101.9 FM right here in Vancouver.
CITR 101.9 FM is proud to support Car Free Vancouver Day and the Vancouver People Summit on Sunday, June 20th. Commercial Drive, Main Street, Kitsilano, and the West End will become car-free neighborhoods. People will take back their streets with food, music, art, street theater, and more. The Vancouver People Summit is on Main Street between 30th and 33rd Avenues. It is part of At the Table, a global movement of civil society groups calling on citizens everywhere to take their place at the G8 and G20 summit tables. The summit will send a strong message to world leaders meeting in Ontario that Canadians want action to end poverty, stop climate change, and create a global economy that works for everyone. Car Free Vancouver Day, June 20th, 12 to 8 p.m., Main Street, Commercial Drive, Denman Street, and West Broadway in Kitsilano. For more information, visit carfreevancouver.org. The Vancouver People Summit on Car Free Main Street on June 20th between 30th and 33rd Avenues. For more information, visit vancouverpeoplesummit.ca.
Welcome back to Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and we're speaking today with Dr. Dave Grayson Dickey. He is the author of Filamentology, The Principles and Purposes of Life. You can find that at filamentology.org, and I'll also place a link up to that on my website, spiritualshow.com. I usually have the past shows on the past shows page, obviously, and then I put a link to the guest's website or to their book or their music or whatever. So check that out, spiritualshow.com. And that ad was actually a good segue into coming closer to the end of Filamentology, Dave. You talk about how we have had this population explosion, and a lot of that is due to our use of fossil fuels, in your opinion, because all of the farming and everything has kind of been fueled by these fossil fuels. Can we talk a little bit more about that?
Yes. That is in the very last chapter of Filamentology on the future. I sort of wrestled with whether or not I wanted to put that in Filamentology, but I felt it's such an important topic that I put it there, and I believe that we have painted ourselves into a corner with the use of fossil fuels simply because we are disconnected from this obvious catastrophe that's facing us. And I believe that more people that can open up to the truth of the filamentous energy fibers, it's not my truth, it's not your truth, it's the truth of the universe, of the source, as you say, I think that more people will see this. Doesn't have to be everybody, but I think the more of us that see it, the more of us that understand it, that we'll be able to take some action to hopefully prevent a major catastrophe for humanity.
So from a filamentology point of view, obviously this book was written before the Gulf oil leak.
Oh, yes.
So from a filamentology perspective, what's your opinion on that?
It's a catastrophe. strangely, and I'm actually originally from Mobile, Alabama, which is right down there in the crosshairs of this big oil spill. Really, this is just a manifestation of the fact that these fossil fuels have gotten much more scarce and much more difficult to get to, and that this is just going to equate to an increase in price of these fossil fuels, which is, I believe, ultimately going to make them really impossible to use the way that we've used them for the last 150 years or so. And it's a catastrophe. I personally believe in the overall goodness of people. I want to. I honestly don't believe, and I'm not a petroleum engineer, but I honestly believe that if you were to look at most of those oil rigs, that they're probably following most of the same process. I really don't believe that the Deepwater Horizon was functioning as far off of the norm is what a lot of people are trying to say. I just think it's an incredibly complex and risky undertaking, and we're dealing with one of the outcomes of that.
So it sounds like what you're saying is that the fact that it happened to BP, it really could have been any oil company. I mean, just drilling underwater, especially in deep water, it's risky.
That's what I think, yes.
Yeah. And as far as the future, for like our hope for the future, what do you see for that from a filamentology perspective?
Well, I think the we as a species are poised at a crossroad or at a new threshold, and I believe that this threshold is an understanding and ability to interact with our energy body and through the energy body to the filamentous energy fibers. I believe that one thing will be the greatest accomplishment in all of humanity. It will be a spiritual evolution for us. And I believe it could happen very quickly. I think that if we have a number of people that get involved in this particular undertaking that have great degrees of talent and leadership and charisma, I believe that we can make this a reality. And basically, kind of getting back to something we talked earlier before, is the ability to move the tuning sphere with volition. Unfortunately, modern humans, we crave this movement, but the only option that most of us have is by some psychotropic, such as alcohol or some of the other psychotropic drugs. I believe that the real difference between contemporary people and people of the future, hopefully soon, but I can't say, will be the ability to move that tuning sphere by volition. I think that's the best case scenario. Unfortunately, I believe that we humans hardly ever learn it the easy way. But I hope not. I hope we can, by people such as yourself and the guests that you have and the theory and the philosophy and the love that you are helping people to see, hopefully we can ignite that.
Well, let's hope so. And it's been so fascinating and wonderful having you on the show. Thank you so much, Dr. Dave Grayson Dickey. I'm wondering if there's anything that you would like to add, anything I haven't asked about.
Well, just a little bit of an extension of what I was talking about. I think that you are doing a fabulous job. I think that your website and that your radio show serve as a tremendous gathering place for people that want and understand that the real crisis of humanity right now is really not an energy crisis or an economic crisis. It's a spiritual crisis. And you bring people in that offer so many different techniques and abilities. And I think that you and the people like yourself it's a pretty new thing, really, on the stage. And I think you're doing a great job with that, and I think it's an extremely necessary job, and I think it's going to be a component of this great evolutionary step for humans. Dare I say 2012?
Yeah, that's a whole nother five episodes, right?
Exactly.
Talk about 2012. Well, thank you. Thank you for your compliments, and thank you for writing Filamentology. It's amazing going from an atheist to writing a book like this. So thank you so much for being on the show today, Dr. Dave Grayson Dickey.
Thank you, Marie.
Thank you. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Have a wonderful day. So that was Dr. Dave Grayson Dickey. You can find his book, Filamentology, at filamentology.org or online at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all those places. Filamentology, The Principles and Purposes of Life. Thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a wonderful hour. I hope you enjoyed the show. We'll be back next week with more talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. And I want to close the show today with another track from Cantoria. This is a man and his young daughter. I think she's about 10 years old. And I believe that this is in Hebrew. So this song is called Or Kadash. It is for the seventh chakra. And the translation in English is, a new light will shine upon us, and we shall soon be privileged to share in its radiance. Have a wonderful day, a wonderful weekend. Be well. Bye-bye.
Shall see you on time, then you scared.